553 Brain Candy Podcast. I'm Susie Meister, here for your listening pleasure.
And I'm Sarah Rice, here also for your listening pleasure.
We're very casual. I've been listening to more podcasts lately, and they are very professional.
Oh, listen.
We lack that.
You know what we are? We're approachable.
Yeah, we're relatable.
Yeah, that's what we say. We're like, this is relatable content.
But they all say like the good stuff that we bury at the end where they're like, you should sign up for our patreon.com/braincandy because we have all this content you'd love. And
well,
do you
guys know that?
Yeah.
Listen, you should definitely do that. You know, I mean, that. We got really good stuff on there. You can hear me do dramatic readings of my journals from Brooklyn. But that is can't miss content.
We should do one of those later today.
I will. That will be fun. Okay. I want to do it to you.
Yeah. Yes. I want
because I want your reaction right now. It's just like me reacting to myself, yeah. Which is also ridiculous.
Yeah,
Now I can have you reacting to me, which is one of my new favorite things that I learned when I did my live sales of my
Don't get me started about those.
Your new favorite TV show.
Listen, people. Sarah has been... She decided to take her resale items into her own hands.
Yeah.
And so she's like going on Instagram Live, selling her goods, which, by the way, are beautiful. And
thank you.
She does a really good job at making them like look great and telling you how you could wear them. And it is so fun. Okay. But it is the best entertainment that you can get, especially for $0.00.
For $0.00. That's right. Unless you purchase something. In
True.
Which case, you get an item and an hour plus. This was an hour and a half of my last one.
Here's why it's so great.
This is so funny. I've been dying to hear this. I mean, you know there's nothing I love more than like hearing why I'm hilarious and funny and all this
stuff. Well, you're in for a real treat then because like I get so excited to tune in. Lincoln and I watch them together and he loves them pretty much as I do. And
I'm going to be like going around collecting random shit in my house just so I can like come on Friday night and like sell it to Susie. I'm like, here's this glass. Yeah. I will have a set of five afterwards.
Empty salsa
but
jar.
It could be yours. Would you like it?
Here's Shipping what I kept trying to figure out. What is my obsession with these things? Like, why do I care? I'm not.
You're not even my size, and you're not buying the clothes.
I actually did buy that blazer, but...
Oh, you did. That's right. Did you get it yet?
Not yet, but I'm waiting.
Oh, it's on its way. It should be there any
very
second.
Excited.
I mailed it, like,
you're
the
very
day.
You're a fast shipper.
I did. Know. I'm trying to beat Jeff Bezos.
Right.
You can suck it.
I concluded that the reason that it's so great, it's not a philosophical answer here. It's just that you are so gifted at being yourself. And that sounds
if there's any
silly,
job that I should be good at.
True, but like it sounds stupid because anybody can be themselves.
Right.
But that's not true. Most people are not comfortable with themselves. And I have concluded also that I think that's what charisma is. It's just somebody who is totally comfortable
Susie,
with themselves.
I can't believe you are saying this. I literally had this same conversation. I have not said the word charisma, like, I don't know, in years. Since, like, I don't know, describing RuPaul to somebody 5 years ago. After I met him at the GLAAD Awards. That's it. It's like the only time I've ever used that word. I was just yesterday having that conversation with a client about that exact thing about how, you know, like the thing that people are drawn to is this being comfortable being you.
Yeah. And who
you
are.
I think they call that charisma. And I totally said that. That is so crazy.
Yeah.
Get out of my brain.
Because I was trying to think of like what it is that makes Oprah so charismatic because she is. But it's not just that she's confident or that she's friendly or something. It's that you can sense that like, she is okay who she is and that it's contagious. And when you see someone like that, you want a piece of it. So that's what makes you so magnetic.
Well, thank you so much. You know, I think that is kind of born out of being vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
that it is the more I've learned for myself, the more I've shared, the more I've opened up, the more vulnerable I've become. And now listen, you don't need to go on stage or go on national television or have a podcast to be vulnerable, to share and open up and like really expose what's in your heart to somebody else in a vulnerable way. You can do that. I just happen to do it on here because I don't talk to any other humans except my clients. And, you know, it's not like that. I'm doing work there. And so here is like the place where I get to be open and vulnerable. And I suppose I'm like that with my friends too. But I think that it, the more I've opened up and the more vulnerable I've become, the more I've become addicted to being vulnerable, to like, it feels really good to just not have to hold on to those secrets or those things that we think we're all alone in feeling. And like, you know, the, is it just me? Like, that's those why we love all those thoughts. Memes and stuff like that, that are like we love that. The isolating thoughts. Mm-hmm. We want to feel like, oh, it's not just me. Yeah. And so I've learned with being really open, it's like, oh, wow, it's really not just me. And then having a podcast where everybody lets you know, oh yeah, me too, which feels so great. So through that, I think I've become addicted to that, that being myself and what I get back from people with that. Like, it feels like people, so what I say all this to say anybody can feel like that and do that and have that. You just have to take the, you know, it's like skydiving. The first few times you do it, yeah, it's freaking terrifying. And then afterwards you're like, you know, you get really good. Those guys who are like jumping and doing all the tricks, they're not like scared anymore to do it. And now we look at them, we're like, wow, that's so cool. Yeah. You just have to like get used to, I mean, and this is way less scary than skydiving, being vulnerable.
I don't know if that's true.
Much, much less risky.
Yeah.
I know it doesn't seem like that, but it is. Yeah. So yeah, there you go.
It is. It's so fun to watch because whenever someone is comfortable like that and then you are a part of it, then you feel more comfortable and
that's all I want.
You know, like it makes the other people feel good too. It's just contagious.
Well, thank you.
I have to tell Adam. Hold on a second.
Yeah.
It's while you were talking, there was a bird that hit one of our windows and then fell. And it, oh, fuck, it's like flailing and at.
Oh, text, no!
He picks it up. He's going to help it. See how we're not professional? I'm like live on the air.
No, that's
in bird. We're like a bird ambulance that we talked about in New York City.
Oh, God, here I am talking about like, how to have charisma, and there's like birds die crashing into the fucking window.
Oh, and it's usually, you know, when that happens, they kind of like get stunned and then they fly off. But this one was, oof, that was bad.
Oh, no.
So, we'll wish that bird the best.
We have internal injuries.
Oh, I hope not. So sad. Oh. Anyway, on that note.
Well, that's fun. Yes. I do feel like I missed my calling to be working at QVC.
Yes. Well,
can they still hire me? Is there still a chance?
Well, do you want to hear about the time I auditioned to be a QVC lady?
Yes! A QVC. Wait, this was, I feel like I remember this.
Yes. This was not long after I moved to LA.
I know this. Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, I had to go on. I did a couple auditions. Like, I made it pretty far, and then I didn't get hired. Thank God, because you get $100,000 a year, period. And you have to live in, like rural Pennsylvania.
What? I'm out.
Yeah. I forget the city that they're based in.
You were right there.
I guess I just like to keep my options open.
Suze, I feel like I remember this because did we talk about me painting your nails because you need to have nice nails?
God, probably.
Probably.
That rings a bell.
That rings a bell.
Yeah. It was so terrifying, though, because you have to go and...
Wow.
It's a mix. That's like a little bit of a mix because you do have to be yourself, but you also have to sell this product that you may or may not even like.
Tell me what you had to sell. What did you do?
You had to bring something in, and it could be anything from your house. I brought in like a beach tote bag thing.
Oh,
and then
cool.
You have to say like what makes it desirable. Why would someone need it or want it? And whatevs. I did not get
the job.
Would
they be interested in a personal anecdote? Because that's what I specialize in.
Yeah.
Do they want to hear a story about my ex-husband?
I think...
That is
Sarah.
What I tend to...
Okay, wait. Those are some of my best, funniest moments from your Insta lives is when you... Sarah not only sells you clothes, but she'll share the backstory of the item. She'll be like, I wore this to a dinner.
That's why it, no joke, took me 2 hours or an hour and however many minutes, hour and a half to go through. I think I maybe sold like 20 items, but that's a long time for 20 items.
Wait, and then like, okay, so some guy kept going on there and being like, do you have any men's clothes? And I almost commented, she does not have men's clothes, you dumbass. And then you were like, why? Yes, I do. And it was like shirts of her ex-husband that she's had for 5 years. And then everyone got sidetracked. Like, why do you still have them?
Right.
They thought
like,
they had.
What are you
with
doing
your tears.
Holding on to this?
Oh, God. It's so great.
I was laughing at that, too. Because, listen, I knew that I had a Poshmark store that was already doing well.
Yeah.
And I.
You went
so,
independent.
Okay. The shirts that I have still have the tag on and are high ticket items. And Susie, you know, we know how we are about high ticket items. We got to like, hold on. You taught me this on the challenge when we would get our swag bags. And Susie was always like, it doesn't matter what it looks like. You're going to trade people for something that's a higher dollar amount.
Yeah.
And then you're going to take this and you're going to bring it to Under Armour and then you're going to return it and you're going to get a gift card. And here's
yes.
what you're going to do. You're going to then sell that gift card and you're going to get that for, you're going to get some cool
yeah.
cash.
I had
and
a
that
system.
Is how you scam the challenge.
Truly. I mean.
And then they got hip to that and started cutting the fucking tags off those dicks.
I mean, it took a while, but yeah, that was a real
It did
bummer.
Take a while. It took about 5 seasons for them to realize that it was after we turned it into a...
An auction.
An auction, a night. Like, it would be like, oh, auction's over. And then Wes would do a thing. So I would be like, auction's open, because you taught me everything I know. You were like, okay, auction's open. So then I would, like, make it a thing, because, like, I want to make sure that we're getting the best... Okay, and I should probably give a backstory. People are like, what the fuck is she talking about?
Mm-hmm.
On the challenge, when we go on the challenge, they would give us Under Armour swag bags. These, like, bags of clothes for us to wear while we were there because Under Armour was a sponsor and they want us to wear it and blah, blah, blah. And, like, look sporty, whatevs. And you know, Susie's like, I'm going to wear this stuff one time and, like, I'm not going to need this bright orange Under Armour sweatshirt. She's like, I don't need this. And so what we would do is we would have this like swap where some people really cared about like the clothes and they wanted to wear the stuff there. And they like were like, oh, I want that item and I want that item. Other people would trade with the guy, like guys would trade with the women because they had like girlfriends and wanted to get Christmas presents. We'd trade with the guys like Wes, my little brother. I would say 90% of his Christmas presents came from Wes's Under Armour swag bags for 10 years. This is totally true. All of my brother's climbing shirts, all of those, every shirt that he wore in any Christmas photo was Wes's shirt from the challenge. And CT, because they were the same size. Not Wes and CT, but one brother was the same size Wes and one brother was the same size CT. So there you go. And so Susie would say, you got to go like dollar for dollar and you want to trade something. If you're not going to be wearing it, you want to trade something that has a bigger ticket, like, you know.
Yeah, because you might have like a really cute shirt that everyone wants. But it's not like a high value, retail value. So then you could trade it for like a really expensive, ugly item.
Right.
And then sell
then you take all that. And Susie and I are totally the people who are willing to put in the extra effort right. to go
we
to.
We really are. Hence we, this
I
podcast.
Am so willing to put, I'm willing to spend 2 hours on Instagram Live.
I know. There's nothing she won't do for you guys, people.
Make a dollar. So, you know, okay, so back to what I was saying about, you know, high ticket items and everything. So those shirts were high ticket items, so I had to hold on to them. Then my ex did not, the one that came after Landon, did not like any reminders of my past. Mm-hmm. So, and he was like, you know, would see my Instagram and social media and stuff like that. So I didn't feel comfortable putting clothes. I felt like I was going to get a conversation of like, why do you thought you guys were questioning why I was holding on to my ex's shirts? Like this guy, he would have definitely been like, oh, do you still have feelings for him? No, I just want the money. That's the truth.
Yeah, I have feelings for money.
Yeah, I have. That is it. I still have my wedding dress because I'm like waiting to sell it. Not because I have any sentimental or emotional attachment to it. I just want the money. That's it. Like, wouldn't it be great to sell a wedding dress and like give myself a little vacation or like, you know, a little like fun, treat myself to something.
Yes,
something good's got to come out of that.
Maybe it's time. Instagram Live. Let's do it. Wedding
edition. I know, for my wedding dress, right?
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
Talk about the stories you get with that. That would be so funny. I put it on. Oh my God, it would be so funny. I should. That would be hilarious. Yes. So people were really curious about that and that made me laugh a lot. But those are still available, by the way. They did not sell because people
Well, I wondered about that because it was kind of like the honor system. Did you get a lot of people like that didn't end
up paying? Every single person paid.
Except for those dudes.
Except for the dudes.
Wow.
Yeah, but they weren't going to. They were like, I was like, bye. They weren't going to pay anyway. That person was like, $1 million. I'm like, shut up.
Well, it's great.
But I was expecting somebody from WikiFeet to be like all over those shoes. What the hell?
Too.
Nothing.
Maybe we need to like do better marketing and outreach.
Yeah, I did like day of advertising for
day
this. And that's never good. So that was my fault. I didn't know. It was like last minute. You got to be in the mood.
Post a picture of your feet only. Bare feet, and then be like, would you like to buy the shoes that these have?
Oh, I should
wrecked.
Do that.
Yeah.
I should definitely do. Oh, speaking of which,
yeah,
I have confirmation that from a neurosurgeon, that we are correct.
Yeah.
In what we said about
the wiring.
Yes.
Yeah.
That
foot wire
yes.
is
the foot
near
wire.
The vagina wire or something.
Correct. If you were to take, it's in this part of the brain that's in kind of like the middle of the brain, mid-frontal part. And if you were to cut the brain right down the not down the middle. Oh my God, there's a name for this. Is why they have these names. Like, you know, in doctor lingo, they have like the anterior, posterior, whatever, like the kind of slices that it is.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I'm talking about? Like,
yes.
Cutting the brain in half, not in the way that would make two equal halves, the other
right.
direction.
Like through the equator.
When you do that, yes, you will cut in half this, like it's right in the folds of your brain. Like, right. You know how your brain kind of looks like?
Sure.
Yeah, it's got like all those little folds. It's like the cingulate gyrus or something like that. I was just watching a video on it the other day. But if you look at it, the way that your brain is like folded up there, it's right next to it. It's all the parts. Like, have you seen any of those videos where they'll be doing operation on somebody and they'll take like an electrode or something and they'll press one part of the brain and like the arm will move.
Sure.
It's like that. Like, we know exactly what part of the brain goes to what. And so that's right there. And I'm glad that I got confirmation because I've been like spouting that fact out
with authority
for a while.
Okay. Well, when you see your neuro something person again, will you get to the bottom of why? I believe this is statistically true, but it's definitely anecdotally true that far more men have a foot fetish than women have a foot fetish. So I would like to know if our brains are similar in that wiring, why it does not affect women in the same frequency rates.
Mm. I wonder if that has to do with us being visual or like how we
process.
Yes.
Visual like information.
Stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, like we're more cerebral and in our heads about it.
Yeah.
And they're more like, I need to see an hourglass figure and that's it.
Okay. Well, that'll be our theory, you know. And then you can get to the bottom of it.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, if you happen to be a person who has type 2 diabetes, you might be interested to hear about a product called Pendulum. It's a glucose control that'll help you manage your diabetes naturally. Here's what interested me about it. They're starting to learn all this stuff about how, you know, everyone knows, you know, diet and exercise. We're always talking about how the same 10 things are the things that everyone ought to be doing to improve their health. But one of the things that they're learning a lot about is the importance of your gut microbiome.
Right. We've been talking about this.
I'm obsessed with this. So this is true in general for everybody, but also for people with type 2 diabetes. And Pendulum helps to lower A1C and manage blood sugar and manage blood sugar spikes and all that jazz. So you can consult with your doctor and get the scoop, but they have a money back guarantee, 90-day trial, Pendulum glucose control. Take control of your glucose levels today. Try Pendulum glucose control for 90 days. If you're not satisfied with your levels, you'll get your money back. Visit pendulumlife.com to find out more and use promo code BRAINCANDY for 20% off your first bottle of membership. That's PENDULUMLIFE.com. Promo code BRAINCANDY. There you go.
That is very important.
Very important.
I know a lot of people who struggle with that.
I'm totally obsessed with the gut thing.
I know. It's so good.
There's a lot to be learned. Oh. Like, I think we're just starting to learn about all that.
I know. It's Susie. And let me tell you, I fell off the non-dairy wagon.
Okay.
And right into a river of cream, Suze.
In your coffee or what?
Well, coffee. And you know what did me in? I had if there were one thing that, like, somebody was like, you could eat as much of this as you want and, like, just go for it. You know what it would be?
What? Ice
cream.
Whipped cream. Whipped cream.
I love it. I want to take it, the whole can, straight to the face.
Like Ready Whip.
Ready Whip, which isn't even whipped cream. I know that. It's like
I thought it was. Is that not? I thought Cool Whip was the one that's not.
It, there's definitely when I put it in my coffee and it then like and I don't drink it right away, it leaves a film on the surface that makes me question what things it's doing. Like what kind of film it's leaving inside my body.
It's got petroleum in it or something.
Yeah, like what something that, you know. Whatever, I don't vape anymore. Give me all the whipped cream.
Okay.
So I am just now. I honestly don't even know what I was talking. Oh, right, the dairy. I was like, I am so lost.
Off the wagon.
Yep. Right. My skin broke out like crazy.
Oh damn!
Like crazy. Like I had acne like I was in high school again, and it felt the same. It felt like that hormonal, like, and I could tell it was about, you know how your metabolism, mine is like extra slow, but I will, you know, not take good care of my body, and then I'll feel it about a week or 2 weeks later.
Oh,
where I'm like, takes a minute. Oh, yeah, this is it. That would be that. Like,
what
it
are you
takes
gonna do?
A while.
Are you gonna keep eating dairy or not?
Well, I just ran out of my No, well, and oh my God, Suze, this is okay. Here's that vulnerability stuff we were talking about. The can, I know way too much about the whipped cream at Trader Joe's.
Clearly,
the can of whipped cream, it has 20, it is 20 calories per serving. There are 52 servings in it. I did not use that can 52 times.
Okay,
I did. My servings were generous. And that can didn't even make it like 3 days.
Oh, okay.
That's like heavy whipped cream consumption.
You know, there are worse things.
There are worse things. But so now I'm out of whipped cream and I'm out of coffee creamer. Cause I was like, oh my God, it's so good. Okay. But I'll just wait till I run out. And today is my go to the grocery store day. And today is going to be the get the new creamer, which will be the almond one. Cause I cannot do the dairy. And yeah. It's not for reasons like, oh my God, where was I? I was somewhere out. I think, maybe I was with you. I was with another human and you're the only other person that I see. So
the prime suspect.
I was somewhere and I asked for a pizza, but no cheese, or I asked for something with no cheese. And the waitress was like, oh, because of tummy issues or something.
Oh
no, I was with Barry. We were at, and I was like, no,
that's
but
embarrassing.
Yeah. Like, he didn't care. Whatevs.
Yeah, but, like, I mean, no server should ever be implicitly referring to diarrhea.
Don't comment on my food I order. Don't. And also, if you work at the grocery store, do not comment on my groceries.
That is so true. I once had to buy
do
a pregnancy
test. That should be
test.
A not allowed thing.
Yes. I bought a
Has
pregnancy test
yet?
One time, and they were like, good luck. And I was like, no.
Which could be interpreted any way.
Yeah, but the what you really want is silence.
Yeah, don't comment.
Pretend like you didn't even notice.
Need, right.
Zip it.
Yeah. Zip it. I don't know why that, like, just, I'm super vulnerable. Unless it's the grocery store, yeah, checkout right. aisle, in which case,
all of a sudden,
don't
she's
me,
private.
Don't judge me.
Look away.
Oh gosh. Don't okay, what the heck me. Was I even talking about?
We haven't really even started the show, to be honest.
We have not started the show. None of these things are things that I even wrote down.
This is embarrassing. This is illustrating my point of how we're like still
Whatever.
Amateurs 553 Whatever. Episodes late.
Listen, it's me being vulnerable. So it's
fine. Oh my God.
Yes. Okay, I will get to like facty stuff. Do you want to know a personal story that happened to me that I had a crazy experience that, like, was
All
so
right,
nuts.
Just do you want to. Just
or do you want to hear about, like, fact stuff? Like something that is going on in China that we can debate.
Let's start with your personal okay. story.
I was – okay. So, Suze, ask me how the train for running
I will.
Is going.
Yes. How is your ridiculous – trail 15K training going?
10K. Like, let's not Whatever. Be signing me up for any more than I need to be running. now I finally have some miles in the tank. And first day I went out and attempted to run. Like, remember how I said in my head, I was like, yeah, I can just like go out
yes.
there and do it. Like, it'll be fine.
Yes.
I may
so
have
glad
been
you're wrong.
Speaking from a place of like being
Naivete.
22
yeah.
and like, still training for challenges and like it's
what happened?
I forgot that I have been on the couch for 2 years.
Yes.
Okay, so the first day I go out, I'm like get all prepped. I'm thinking I'm gonna go out for like a while. I'm gonna be gone for like an hour or two. So I've got like my little backpack with my water in it and everything.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna and now I've done that awful thing where I've delayed the inevitable for so long that now I'm like, oh, I have to leave. Like the sun is now setting. It's like 6:30 and I'm leaving to go on this run that
wow.
I wanted run on trails. So I go and I like take off running and I'm like, you know, okay, I'm going to listen to a book on tape to kind of like keep me focused and, you know, maybe make the time go by faster. And, so I start running and I run, I'm in the beginning of the trail, there are a couple signs and I'm just like, you know, casually running past the signs and, you know, not really thinking. And then I get a little bit further down the trail and I'm starting to look around. It's like sunset dusk time and I'm seeing all these little bunnies out and then I'm seeing all these feathers of like pieces of birds, like not
oh,
even
God.
Like whole birds, like, and not even just like, oh, a feather, like a little feather that you find. No, like an entire wing just like ripped off and all
right,
the
like
okay.
someone had like a pillow yeah. fight with a down pillow
yes.
or something. Okay.
Exactly like that. Exactly like that, what it looked like. Excellent. Visual. Thank you, Susie. and so then I started having all these thoughts about the things Barry talked to me about about predators hunting their prey and where they the predator would stalk from. And then I remembered what signs I ran past, the ones that say caution mountain lion area. And I was like,
oh Lord,
what the fuck am I doing? There's nobody else out. I am literally running down their buffet line. It's happy hour. Right.
Oh my God.
And then I'm like remembering the things Barry taught me about like where they are on the trail. So I turn around. I'm like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Like I'm about a half a mile down the trail. I turn around and I was like running downhill and I'm like, oh fuck, I wasn't even like warmed up and now I got to run back up the hill. But in my mind, the mountain lion is already chasing me.
Sure.
So I am bolting up the hill at full speed. And then I take this, I like, okay, there's a little shortcut. Like, I think it's like a shortcut. I don't know, some kids have made. So I try to go up that. And then I realize real fast, that is not a shortcut that humans have made. That is definitely a game trail that some animal has made. That is probably the trail that of the thing that is I'm running away from.
Yeah.
And I was telling Barry this and he was like, oh yeah, it was. And I'm like, oh my God, run away, Sarah. And so that was my first try, and I only it 0.9 miles because I was scared I was going to get eaten. So the next day I'm like, okay, you got to come out. You got to plan better for this. So you're going to leave at noon when there are people out, when there are, you know, it's not like hunting hour or, you know, time for their dinner.
Yeah.
And you're the main course.
Right.
And like, I live in a place where this happens. Like, this is not me being, you know, like
dramatic
mm-hmm. or histrionic. This absolutely happens. And I back up to the Wildwood, or to the Santa Monica Mountains. So it is like right there where their caves are and their land. I'm in their neighborhood.
Yeah.
And, so yeah, so second day, so next day I go out and I was feeling very disappointed too. I'm like, only that's how far I made it. Oh my God. And I was like dying. And then I'm like, am I tired because I was running away from death or, you know, and then I was really mad at myself because there was a part of where it was really steep where I was still like, I had to walk and I couldn't even run up. And I was like, in this moment, if you were being, you can't even run right now or you think you're being chased by an animal. Ugh, oh well. I was like, how are you going to do in a race, Sarah?
Yeah, right.
So that made me nervous. So the next day I was like, okay, I'm going to really do it. I got my little fanny pack this time. Cause I'm like, you didn't need a whole backpack. You're not going out for 6 hours, Sarah. You were an hour. And so I decided just to run through the neighborhoods. So I live in the neighborhood that I grew up in. I live only about a half a mile from the house that I grew up in. And it's the house where I lived when a lot of maybe not so great things happened in my life. And there was some childhood trauma. And and it was the last house that I lived in with my dad. And so I'm running up and down these streets. I'm running up and down the cul-de-sacs. And I finally get to the street that's my childhood, the street of my childhood home. And I'm running up the hill and I lived on a cul-de-sac and it's a cul-de-sac on a hill. So my whole thing was, I was like doing these cul-de-sacs and I would run up one side that was like steep, like try to run up as much as I could. And then, you know, kind of get a nice relaxing run down. So it was like a nice, you know, run up, run down, but I wasn't able to sprint up the steep hill parts. I was like fast walking up those parts because I'm, you know, just started here.
Well,
day
you're
two.
Also training for the Olympic speed walking. So, I mean,
right.
two
correct.
Birds.
I was totally thinking that. I was like, Olympic speed walking, here we come. And so on this part, I was, you know, I'm like walking, but okay. So now I'm coming up to the point where I'm just about to pass my childhood home. And I see there's a man who's loading stuff out of a van, out of like a, you know, minivan. Susie, my brain did this thing. Have you ever had that, have a moment where you see somebody and it looks like someone you know, like your brother or sister, but from back in the day, like if you see them and in your memory, they're younger. Hmm. So you see somebody and you're like, oh, that looks like, say, oh, that looks like Gretchen. But it looks like Gretchen at like 21, and then you're like, oh wait, that can't be her. She's not that age. Have you ever had this happen?
It doesn't ring a bell, but that makes sense.
Oh man, maybe it's, I don't know. It happens maybe because you're the youngest. It doesn't, but because I'm, I don't know. I feel like maybe it's being the oldest. Like this happens with my brothers a lot, where I see somebody and I'll be like, oh my God, it's Luke. And then I'm like, no, that child is 18. Lucas is a grown ass man. He is like my memory of him. So I'm running past this house and I see this man. I swear it looked exactly like my dad. I thought it was my father. I thought he looked, he was bald. He had a goatee. He had the same build. He, my brain was like, that's your dad.
Jeez.
And I felt so triggered in every single, I looked at him. I had this moment where we made eye contact and he looked at me kind of weird because I must have been looking at him like he had two heads or something. And then I just started running because then he turned away. And then I thought, oh my God, is that what my dad would do if he was trying to avoid seeing me? And then like, and I thought for a second, probably. And then my brain went to crazy places where I really did think that this person in front of my childhood home was my father. I take about 10 more steps, which felt like 100, like the time just slowed down in that moment. And I could feel the little child me become really panicky and scared. I could feel that lump in my throat start of like, I'm going to cry right now. And I had to talk to myself and say, you know, I was also, you know, I'm on this run and I'm running and now the guy's looking at me. So I'm, you know, jogging to like also look like I'm doing something and not staring at him like a weirdo. And so I'm having all these conversations with myself where I feel my heart just feels like it's beating 1,000 miles a minute and not because of the exercise. And I have to say, Sarah, that is not your dad. Your dad is an old man now. He has gray. He does not look like that. That is a young man. That is somebody who lives there. Look at him. He's loading a child's, you know, car seat out of the thing. Like, this is not that place. You are not, you are totally safe. And I also had to tell myself, I used it. I was so aware in that moment because like, I talked to clients about how we don't have a lot of opportunity to practice how really talking to ourselves in these moments where we are at an emotional extreme because we need the emotional extreme for us to practice it. So, you know, the healthier we get, the fewer and far between those opportunities are. So I don't get an opportunity like this all that often. So I was so aware in the moment of talking to myself and saying like, this is not him. You are totally safe right now. In fact, you can run away.
That effective or did it not?
Yes.
Okay, good.
It was, but the thing that I was so grateful for, Susie, that I think it wouldn't have been effective if I was running. Because it was pushing me past that point of, it was giving my heart a reason to be racing. And I was like, and I told myself, I said, okay, so now so my house, my old house was on the uphill where I'm running. So I'm running on the uphill, fast walking on the uphill past my house. Then I see this man that I think is my dad in my brain. Yeah. And so I start running and then I'm running around the curve of the cul-de-sac and having all these thoughts and talking to myself. And now I'm on the downhill where I'm now getting a chance to kind of like take a deep breath. It's downhill. I feel the wind in my hair. I'm really like thinking about how my body feels right now and how I'm safe in this environment. And this is not then. And then I have the thought of, wow, you're really feeling anxious right now, but like, look at how fast your heart is racing and look at how much you want to cry. And I said, let's channel this. I'm coming around like now the flat part between the two streets before it becomes the next street and the next cul-de-sac. And I said, you can use this. You do not need to get upset. You do not need to cry. You do not need to let those emotions take over. You are in charge right now and you're in charge of using this. Oh my God, it makes me emotional right now.
Yeah.
You're in charge of using this energy, this feeling. And turning it and channeling it into whatever you want. Mm-hmm. And so I said, okay, this is your chance. We're not going to walk up this hill. Mm-hmm. We're going to run up the whole thing. And don't you know, I ran up the entire thing.
Wow.
And it felt so good because it felt like I was conquering not just that hill, but also that, like,
his power over you.
Yes.
Yeah.
And people need to kind of, like, I get that, like, you have to face, yeah, you know, you have to, like, kind of be confronted with it again to then really show your younger self, show that inner child, look, we're in this, we're feeling those same feelings that used to really fuck you up for like 72 hours, make you think that, like, you know, you're, I don't know, whatever it made me think, who knows the kind of ripple effect that has just on that, what did you call it? Charisma. Mm-hmm. It definitely took that away.
Yeah.
And so I said, not right now. And it felt so powerful. Then on the next hill, I felt like this feeling of like, oh, you got this. Mm-hmm. You're good now. Like, you just had to breathe through that. And it also felt like a wall that I had hit. And then I just kept running and I kept going and I finished a 5K on my second day.
That's amazing.
So I ended up doing three miles and a little bit. And the only reason I came home was because I was starting to get a blister on my toe that I was nervous was going to pop. And then it would put me out for a couple more days. So I could have, I was like, I think I could keep going. So day two, 5K, which is half the distance. Damn. I think that's pretty good.
Wow.
I think I'm just going to be fine. And if I felt like it was a reward for, you know, going out and putting the energy into working towards this goal.
Yeah.
And I feel like I overcame a whole bunch. So I wanted to share that little story.
Yeah. I'm sure you feel very empowered.
Damn. Triggers are real.
Isn't it the worst?
Dude, Susie, I was so aware and I could feel it. I could feel that little girl. I could all of a sudden, it was like I saw in my mind, my clothes changed, what I was wearing changed. I was a little girl, like everything changed. And I had to just really be nurturing and be kind of firm too. Tough love kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Of like, look at how strong I am. We're going to be strong for you too right now. And so, you know, just like talk to that little child and maybe, you know, I do not recommend that people just go throw themselves into situations where they're triggered. But I think that if you have been avoiding things because you are worried about triggers that may come up, that if you are in a place where you've been working on having awareness and being mindful and challenging faulty thoughts and old thinking and incorrect beliefs about yourself and things like that, that it is only when we are kind of presented or in those situations or situations that trigger those similar emotions that we can put our stuff we've learned to use.
I'm so proud of you.
Thank you, Suze.
I mean, I don't want you to run the trail thing, but
I know you don't.
Glad it was a positive experience in the end.
Does it make you feel better to know that this is a Napa Food and Wine related event? Like,
oh,
it's
yeah,
not
it
like
does.
Directly
Takes the
related,
edge off.
But like it's like there's wine involved.
Yeah, it's a little better.
So I'm like running to wine.
That I can get on board with a little
and
better.
Good wine. So like that's cool.
Okay. Another thing that's very cool, as you guys all know, is playing Best Fiends.
Yes. Talk about just thinking about this the other day.
It's so fun. It's such a great
way. I think about it when I'm not playing it. That's silly. I was just thinking about it the other day. That's funny. I love it.
It's such a fun game. You play through an actual storyline, and you complete with good guys, which are the fiends, and the not-so-good guys, which are the slugs. It's a whole like story.
The slugs. That's
right. And there's all these challenging little puzzles as you progress, and they're adding. They always add characters, and it's just so cute. Such a nice break from the stress of life, and it's got brain boosting puzzles. So we love that.
We love those.
So you can always keep yourself occupied. Never be bored if you have Best Fiends. Download Best Fiends free today on the App Store or Google Play. That's Friends without the R, Best Fiends. And we actually have a guest today.
Oh my gosh, you guys get no facts.
Would you like to share some before I introduce her?
I'll just say one.
Okay.
Nope, I won't even. I'll save it.
Wow, teaser. Okay.
I'll save it. Because why we need it? I love a guest. I feel like we ended on a good note there. There we go.
Okay. Our guest today is best-selling author and scholar of religion, Kate Bowler. She has been on the show before to promote her other book, Everything Happens for a Reason and Other Lies I Love.
Oh, my God, yes.
And then now she has a book called No Cure for Being Human. Both of them explore her experiences as a prosperity gospel scholar. And if you're not familiar, that's like believing that God will bless you on this earth right now if you're faithful. So you'll get health and wealth here on earth. You don't even have to wait till you go to heaven. Mm-hmm. I also study that. So she and I are in the same field and we've been friends for a long time. And then she hit it big with her first bestseller a couple years ago, and now she's got number two. It's so good, and I think of it like kind of like anti-self-help because she's telling the truth.
Yes, she provides balance to them.
She's saying like you can do all the things. You can have rituals. You can meditate and eat right and pray to your God and all the things that, you know, people like to act are virtuous. And still, bad things may happen to you. And how to cope with that. Rather than these self-help people who say, like, if you just do this formula, all your problems will be solved. And I think it's so refreshing.
Yes.
It's essential reading. Check it out. No Cure for Being Human. Reminds us of our merch, right, Sarah? What's the...
Yes, I love it. I mean, hello. That's like right in line with our motto.
It's hard being a person.
Hardest.
So we welcome her, and you should follow her on social too because she is very inspiring and such a beautiful soul, and she's hilarious. So welcome to the show, Kate Bowler.
Isn't it funny how they do that now?
Yeah, and who is this woman, and what's her backstory?
I have questions. Welcome to Brain Candy Podcast, Kate Bowler.
Oh, hello,
Dr. Bowler, I should say.
I am Dr. Weiser. I'm so glad to be here, too. Just two ladies with PhDs in American religious history hanging out.
Yeah, but you're super fancy, and I'm over here, like, with my old-timey, like...
No.
Set up.
You are every good thing that I remember and have continued to be. And I am just thrilled to be talking to you.
I'm thrilled because I just finished your darn book and it is so great and profound and special and all that. Like I was writing my review on Goodreads and I'm like, what do you say about a Kate Bowler book? She's magical. Okay. That's it. You said it was medium sad. Do you stand by that?
I do. Because I'll be at the person at parties. It's like, yeah, these snacks are really good. Do you ever wonder if you can forgive your mom?
Embrace your deep thoughts or?
No. As a wildly unpopular child, I learned early on that it's always a bit of a roulette situation when you try to swim in the deep end.
Yeah. Well, we had you on a couple of years ago after your first book, which, you know, bestseller, whatever. And then now we get to have you back. And I'm wondering, because a lot of the book, you're grappling with this idea of like, how the heck do we spend our magical minutes in life?
Yeah.
And so I'm like, how the heck did you decide whether to spend your minutes writing this book?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And well, especially because I'd really only written history books before then. So that was a lot of like interviewing and being like, Linda walked over to the podium in 1920.
I love your books. Wow. People should be reading those too.
You and I have a deep and abiding love of things that have happened in the past. And I guess writing it all felt like I was trying something really ridiculous. First, that I was going to try writing something that was, you know, not history and super personal. And I think for academia, that always feels a bit gauche,
yeah,
like a little embarrassing. And people are like, you know, cough, narcissist, like every time if you want to like write memoir and God forbid. And yeah, it's just such a culture of, I'm going to say this with so much love, but like false humility, right? Like, oh, it's about the ideas. So you really feel like you can't or shouldn't write about yourself. And I felt like when I was doing it, it did feel kind of embarrassing, but it was the first time I felt honestly like I could practice saying truer, harder things than I was able to say out loud. Cause the second I got sick with cancer, I really became like a liar super quickly. I was like, oh, thank you so much for asking. I'm doing really well. And I was very cheerful and very accommodating with other people's incredible advice. And I lost, like, I felt like I lost the ability to just say that shitty, horrible thing that you think at 2 a.m., which is like, dear God, like, is this my life? Like, is this my body? Is this what's going to happen to me? And then writing, I felt like I could just like, I could write my way until I had that like horrible, wonderful feeling like I'd really said it. Like when you finally tell a best friend and you're like, and that's how it is. And writing was, oh man, I'd never had that feeling before. And so I really kind of got hooked on it.
You're kind of a curiosity though, because in a way you're sort of the anti self-help guide.
Thank you for saying that. That's like honestly the nicest thing anyone could possibly say to me. Thank you. You can't do it, everyone. No one can do it. You will not live your best.
Terrible, you guys. No, but like you sort of reject this idea of like, you know, the notion that we can sort of steal ourselves into money or health or whatever. But aren't you kind of lumped into this group though?
Yeah, it is absolutely. I feel like I'm always part of, I think, just like a category confusion. And maybe that's just sexism, right? It's like the second a woman uses a slightly understanding voice, they're like, she's going to help me fix my life.
This feels nurturing.
It does. Yeah. Instead, it's like, she's written a book about cultural scripts about how you can't necessarily fix your life. She really wants you to stop saying that. But she does have a very understanding voice. I do really, really want people to question the deep, difficult, lovable lies at the heart of the wellness and health industry, in which we really are, and especially women, given this like Instagram theology of perfect families and perfectible bodies and lives. Like the idea that we are a perfectibility project is like primarily gendered work. And it is just wildly pernicious.
What do you think drives this urge that we all seem to have to find the answer, the truth, whatever?
Yeah.
Is it just because we don't know what the heck happens when the lights are out or what?
Right. Well, I think part of it, Susie, because we're both nerds, I'm just going to try to give as many like structural to individual answers. I think part of it is a genre. Like it was the development of a genre called self-help, and it's structured a set of expectations we have when we pick up a cheap paper book at that paperback at the airport. Is we think like there's probably going to be 7 chapters. Each are going to start with a title that says you can. It's going to have a formula. We're going to feel really good at the end, and that's what I'm buying. Damn it! And it's going to have this empowered you, and it's super high, like anthropology, right? Like a theory of personhood, and like we. Also, do you bring up all the time that you are also a historian of the prosperity gospel?
No, never.
You absolutely should. You are like that you and I share a brain.
No, people will start asking me the things that they want from you. And I see on your Instagram, I'm like, I can't handle it.
Well, I think that if I... if I just like could have the choice of anyone to share this brain and life with, Susie, you're just so way up there. Cause we both know how, like, starting in the late 19th century, Americans got hooked on this metaphysical, came to be called New Age, New Thought belief that people are moving toward a future that is always better. And it became like a high anthropology we see in the American Dream and we see on television and we see in this emerging genre of self-help. And then by the time we get to, dear God, the 70s and like polyester sweeps the nation, we're just positive that we are going to buy ourselves into that consumable self. Like, and then Susie, you just need to choose. You just need to choose better. And then you're going to get there.
It does sound nice.
I know. Well, even while I'm saying it, I was like, I kind of want it.
Whenever you're doing the research, because whenever you are doing these historical books and historical work, you're kind of just totally immersed in the rhetoric. Do you ever find yourself really buying into it?
Oh, totally.
Sounds really great.
Yeah. And sometimes if I just get the wrong seat, I'm like ready to hand over all my money. Like if you put me near like the wheelchair section or some area in which like there's people with obvious, like not best life now problems in which they are struggling with bodies and limitations and illness and like visible and invisible. Then the second I'm there, I'm like these theologies level us because they consistently like blame the suffering. But you put me near the choir and I am just like, this is working. I'm like getting the harmonies. I'm like not taking notes anymore. I get so excited because I love it when people say, all you need to do is try. Because sometimes like we all know people where like they just needed to get back up and then they didn't. And that's like that in of itself is like always a tragedy, but like finding that better language for right. What like limited agency, like that place between everything is possible and nothing is possible. That feels like very complicated work in our culture. It feels like if you say not everything is possible, you're going to be, you're just going to be like pelted by the good vibes only crowd. It's going to be death by California. You'll never make it out.
Whenever you were interviewing some of these, you know, leaders of the movement, did you sense that they really believed it?
Oh yeah. I would say like in the sort of sincerity, I feel weird about saying smell test, but sincerity smell yeah. test. I think that, I mean, they're all, most people are in a kind of have a set of wellness beliefs because they're positive that they really have found something that almost works and they're just working out the kinks, you know, in the formula. They've got to like work the plan, right?
Right. Everyone, so there's just asterisks.
Yeah. And it's me and I didn't, and you know, for the ultra religious, it could be like faithfulness and just, and then for every sort of, I mean, we all had the, like, we, a generation before it was Amway and Mary Kay. And now it's Peloton. It's just Peloton and it's all hustle culture and it's, you know, and it's every shirt that Spiritual Gangster as a brand puts out. Wild. And I love Spiritual Gangster tank tops. I still do, but I always want the one that just says nothing but love. But it has but if you would only try feeling that really kind of like that gets us going, like that does get us on the bike or like buying our cousins essential oils.
I mean, it's sort of a genius philosophy because if you are thriving, you feel like you deserve it then. And if you're not, well, then there's somebody that's going to show you the path. I mean, it's really enticing.
And we all know like winners, right? Like people who just look like they figured it out and their kids all have these like Easter outfits, you know, and they're always saying things like, Jordan, comma, you're my best friend.
Stop it.
And I'm like, Jordan seems amazing. And I just, you know, I find it so intoxicating, you know, and then you meet Jordan. And you're like, wait, life is actually hard for everybody.
Right. But do you think that you are kind of revealing that, and are people accepting of that message?
just gently shaking head. I struggle. And I think, like, for me, part of the deep, like, joy and also pain of, like, having these conversations about the self-help culture is that it is just really hard to be a person in pain in our culture. And it is really, I'm not gonna lie to you, it is hard for me a lot to tell the truth, to just even answer, like, how are you, without feeling like I'm just about to be fixed, or like I can hear someone with their tone of voice. You know how it goes when you're like, someone's like, how are you? And you're like, you know, for me, it's just like, oh, I'm just managing the enduring pain of chronic cancer. Just trying to say it in a way that, like, doesn't punch someone in the face. And then you can just hear, like, that they're like trying to say something comforting, but also reaching for the, just heading for the off ramp. And their voice just modulates where it's like, oh, well, you know, and I was like, dear God, like, we like the feeling always that you're suddenly behind glass and like everybody else has some kind of life that's fixable and you don't, and you're just some tragedy because you just can't make it work. And that has always really fucking sucked about this. And I love doing the kind of like public, like pastoral piece where you're just like, look, like, you are not broken. You are not the bad thing. Like, you are loved. Like, it is okay. And then, but so often, just even on social media, I'll get the very intense, how dare you say things can be terrible. Don't give up. Like, God is making all things good.
Oh God.
I'm like, well, God's making some things good and the rest is just apparently in development or something. I don't know.
What do you think inspires that sort of toxic positivity?
Yeah. Thing? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think a lot of it is fear.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it too is just our brains, because they're synthetic, can usually only tolerate one seemingly very good explanation at a time. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of people, it's like a really strong orienting thought. Like for some people, it's God has a plan. Mm-hmm. And the idea that God has a plan, and I'm like a very, you know, Jesus-y person, and just love that Lord. Just love that Lord, Susie.
You do. So nice.
really into it, et cetera. But like, it seems to kind of be a totalizing thing where you're then not allowed, everything that had then has to be conform into an argument about how there's only a single path in which all things have to then be called somehow good, which is, you know, I can't call cancer good. I can't call global plagues good, or the breakdown of democracy or racism, or, you know, like all the structural and individual inequality that like tears our life apart. And so, I mean, and there's other versions of this. I get a lot of, you know, because people are less and less overtly religious. So I do get this a lot from the universe has your back types, and just overly causal explanations. And I think there's so much hope in that, but they've really gotten confused between hope and certainty. And so that they kind of want to shellack you with the certainty. And that is so painful.
It's one of my favorite things that you do though, online, is when you talk about how both things can be true. We can be grateful and pissed. And, you know, like, because a lot of times you get this idea that gratitude is somehow the antidote for suffering. Yeah.
Yes. Did you count your blessings though? I just feel like, I feel like you've got an abacus behind you. I feel like you just didn't count them all up. You don't
My
know.
My sister and I have this deal where we had to decide. The gratitude is implicit, okay? I'm going to bitch about something. Yes. I'm thankful for all this stuff.
Yes, yes, yes. And?
Because it's a lot of work to constantly have to like add yes. that. But I know I have a lot of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And the relative suffering is always real, right? Like there is truly at any point always someone who genuinely has it worse. Yes, also that. But also, dear God, like, I mean, nobody, the stuff that that doesn't take seriously is just how deeply personal loss is. Like, nobody's in my body. Nobody's in your body. No one knows what that feels like. Like, look, no one can even share it. Like, they can watch you in pain and have absolutely no way to fix it. Like, those things are inherently not relative. They're just yours. Like, your losses, the people who love you and whose lives hang on yours, like, that shit is yours. And, like, nobody gets to explain that away. And someone is always trying to tell me that something else will make it better or easier. And it makes me feel, it does feel like a certain kind of gaslighting where they're looking at you and all of your beautiful things and not acting like it's not a tragedy to worry that you will to lose them or to just struggle with how unbelievably hard life is. Like, and that is a special kind of hell for women in particular, I think.
Do you ever feel burdened by the way that people now see you as sort of a sounding board for their grief and pain? Seems like a big job.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And so, can I tell you the scope of the bananasness, which is so great and so intense. So part of what, so I wrote this book about women in ministry, right? Yes. Preacher's Wife. And I studied, hundreds of, female centered inspirational brands and the kind of emotional labor and the assumptions placed on women that they'll do all this affective work. So they'll be then, like, we're talking about grateful and beautiful and like all the things. And one of the things I took away from that study was that the job of being publicly inspirational is truly impossible, but also that, the worst versions, that the hardest part about, social media and the desperate search, even just right now, for online connection, is that the things that really people really need are the things that the market will never support, right? Like, people will sell a book, but they don't really, in that model, would ever have time to stop and answer an email from somebody who's like, I'm going into hospice right now, and I just don't know how to manage, like, I don't know how to tell my kids. Now, I am not an expert in how to tell your kids about, it's all kinds of things that fall outside my area of expertise, but that's partly why I immediately reached out for grant support to hire like a social worker, frankly, and a pastor to help respond to people. And that came out of, because a friend of mine died, and my friend Rachel died very suddenly, and all of this grief, like, came at her friends in a way that would seem truly unbearable. And I thought, there's so much need in the world, and there is nothing about a brand-centered culture that can support the weight of that. And also, people have these really profound needs. So I hired lovely people who help who run the kind of like therapeutic infrastructure of all this, because it can't ever really be a single person. And it really makes me sad that we're so lonely and so desperate right now for connection, and that people just sit there then scrolling, like hoping that something will pop out and like serve them, when the truth is we're so interdependent. Like, really what we need is we need our people, and we need all of our bubble wrap. And the best we can do is just try to create enough love that it gives a little lift, but certainly, like, I'm just at this point smart enough to know, like, it can't be me.
No, it's like emptying the ocean with a teaspoon, I'm sure.
It does. It does feel really beautiful to be in the, I always think of it kind of like the theological hospitality industry.
Yeah,
where you get to like hear people's, because I teach in a divinity school. So I teach, you know, mostly academic courses that are going to go either to academics or to pastors. And that's to me the fun, both and, because if I just taught in a, you know, a purely academic setting, I would never have to ask myself like, yes, but what are the implications of this teaching? Yes, but have you seen this in real life? And like having, you know, all these people's stories, I find like really does kind of change me and like humble me in the way that I teach, because I honestly, if I hadn't done this, I would truly, truly never have slowed down to ask myself like, what is, especially with like the self-help and wellness industry, like what are the genuine burdens that this places on like people and families? So yeah, that has been like a weird subplot of my strange life.
No kidding. Like when I perused,
yeah,
your situation, I'm like, wow, people really need connection and meaning. And you seem like a nice person.
I only seem like a nice person. Like, there is a darkness inside of me that I am.
I like to imagine there is.
There's enough.
Okay. So, you know, the phrase, I believe it's a chapter in your book, like best life now.
Yeah.
This has come, you know, kind of like the catchphrase. You're kind of repurposing this idea.
Yeah.
How can we do that without being gross?
Great. I love this problem. Yes. Cause I even catch myself saying it, right? It was coined in 2004 after Joel Osteen, televangelist, largest church in the country, Lakewood Church's first book, Best Life Now. I even have the Best Life Now board game, which I play with my students.
Whoa.
Straight up, I'd really like to play it sometime.
Everyone's a winner.
There are some losers in the game of Best Life Now. There are some, you would love it. And it's so fun because you can see all the kind of like intellectual infrastructure of this, like God will fix your life. You just have to tap into the right kind of faith, like in a board game.
Wow.
But what's so fun, it's kind of like Chutes and Ladders, I guess. Is the game, but they have these wildly personal exercises. So when I force my students to do it, all of a sudden, like some poor guy named John is having to look into a mirror and whisper three
affirmations
he likes about his body. And I'm like, I'm sorry, John, but you have to do it.
Hey, as part rules.
I didn't make it.
Yeah.
I didn't make it, John. So it's part of this, like if you just dig deep and you tap into this deep kind of theological therapeutic core that all the good things are already inside of you, just need to externalize them in your life. Then you can have your best life now. You can have happiness on this earth, no matter what your circumstances. You can have health and wealth, and there's a family prosperity gospel in there. And the feeling that all problems are not just like, you know, they're never structural obstacles. They're all just kind of tripping hazards on the way to a truly victorious life. And you can see that in all their church names. Like, I used to love the prosperity mega churches, like founded in the 80s. They always had ones like Victory International Center, and then like giant eagles, right? Like flying overhead. What was the prosperity church that you looked at a series of prosperity churches, didn't you, mm-hmm. for your dissertation?
Yeah. One was called Victory.
Was it? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, they are often named in a way that, you know, will tell you what you're about to get in yeah. their eyes. Right. If you just do a few little things.
Did they have any logos that you remember? I'll never forget. My favorite, it just said, it was Winner's Church, where winning is a lifestyle.
I'll tell you what they didn't have. They didn't have crosses or, you know, the traditional stuff yeah. that you imagine.
You can't even get them to sing like Amazing Grace, because it's How Sweet the Sound That Saved a...
It's a bummer. What's
a wretch? Right. A wretch? No. Saved a winner. Didn't even need it. It's amazing. It's so, you know, and at Joel Osteen's church. I went for a Good Friday service one time and they brought a lamb on stage and it was so cute. And I was
my
like,
son would love that.
It was full menagerie. And I thought, honestly, like they're going to get to it. Like somebody, like Jesus has to die very badly at some point in the story. But no. And then Victoria came out, the beautiful, beautiful Victoria with her very angry eyebrows. And she remember she walked out and she was like, isn't it so great? We serve a risen Lord. And I was like, not yet, Victoria.
Yeah, he's dead.
He's dead for a bit. And so, yeah, I mean, it's always so hard, right? Because the church was, you know, like founded on a guy that was murdered. And then most of the early disciples were murdered. So it's not like a real lifestyle.
They like skipping over the bad news.
Like at least for like 4 or 5 centuries of bad, bad news. Get to just medieval castles, I guess.
But I bet they loved you though. Like when you were working with these people, weren't they super into you?
Oh, I did love them. And especially the people in the pews. The problem was, is at the time I had this really terrible joint condition. I didn't know what it was. And it created paralysis in both arms at times. And so I was sometimes just like moseying into a faith healing service with like double arm casts. No. And then they were just like moths to a flame. Like they were just, oh, I can always still just feel like the hands. Like there's just people always praying for me. But then like so disappointed in me for not being healed. And that's kind of been a perennial theme, is like, what happens when you're the person not healed? Like what happens when you're the person that still has the same garbage, unfixable problems? And that has sort of been my deal, I guess, is chronic heart stuff.
That's why everyone ought to be reading your book, No Cure for Being Human. We always say at Brain Candy, it's hard being a person. It just is.
Yeah.
Usually I conclude with finding out what you keep in the trunk of your car, but I probably asked you that last time. So I would rather find out.
Did I say flares?
Because I think so.
Because I spent the year in Canada and it's like all still shovels.
Yeah,
and flares.
I remember it being like troubleshooting, like stuff.
Yeah, there's no like California gym stuff. It wasn't like.
Hey, you need flares though. Nothing wrong with that. I will do instead. I want to know your favorite roadside attraction that you visited.
Oh, that is the nicest question. I love roadside attractions.
You really do.
I love it so much. I love the, there's a Ten Commandments in North Carolina where one is truly misspelled. And, I've gone to like the, what was that? It was a theme park where I saw Jesus risen and crucified, like crucified, oh, yes. Of course, for every day.
You went like there.
1 in 3, a Holy Land experience in Orlando. Yes. Yeah, this man with very soulful eyes was murdered every day and and came back and heaven was like this huge smoke machine display and I loved it. And oh, honestly, Susie, the funniest thing that happened was they had this, and I love a good prayer time. I really like it when people get stuff where they could like write their prayers and put places. I think it's super moving.
Yeah.
So I went to the place where people could like tack up their little prayers and they had this big cross that you could kind of like put your own prayer on. I thought that'd be so nice. And then there is this note that was like dead in the center of this, Holy Land Experience theme park. And it was run by these two televangelists at the time who were constantly under investigation. They were like really, really sort of, there's always like a little asterisk there. And right in the middle of the cross, it had like a note that had obviously been written by a disgruntled employee. And it said, I pray that this park will pay more money in employee compensation and less money on golden lions. Because there were golden lions every...
That's my prayer too then. I'm deciding.
I took a picture. I wept. I was so happy. So that's the best. Yeah. And I found a gator. I went to Shane's Gators recently so I could see the world's largest replica of the world's largest lighthouse.
No way.
Just this last weekend.
It's so meta. Yeah. That's amazing.
It was
so happy for you.
Thank you. It was almost really special.
Yeah, it was a replica of specialness. Oh, that reminds me, when you said about the televangelists, we will have to talk about the Tammy Faye movie.
Oh my gosh, could we? Yes.
I can't wait. Did you see it already?
No, I'm very excited. I'm devoted. I'm teaching a prosperity gospel course starting in a couple weeks, and I'm going to make us all watch it together.
Yes. I bet it's great. And you know, her son, Jay, he seems to feel like it honors her and, you know, is nice. And so that makes me happy because I love her in a way.
Oh, I think we've hundreds of hours of Tammy Faye. She's, my son still dances just at the sound of her voice. It's so ingrained in his childhood.
She's a fascinating and complicated woman, and I miss her.
Yeah.
But thank you for chatting on Brain Candy. I hope everyone reads your book. I know they will, and it'll be like a whole thing. You'll be fancy again. And I just hope you keep writing because it's a public service that you're doing.
Thank you, hon. Thanks, this was Kate. So much fun.
Thanks. You're the best. Thanks for tolerating me.
Oh my gosh, you're so good at this. You're so fun and present and so easy to talk to. Oh gosh.
One, two, three, four. Those are numbers. But you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.